I love typing.
Not messing my Google Docs, Meeksy.
Supergirl Radio is going live every night of the week. How do you like it? Is becoming a human burrito a plus or a minus? I don't know. It does seem snug.
I mean, they say you are what you eat.
Kira.
I love that.
So I do a podcast called Supergirl Radio, and one of our segments is Lena Luthor, boardroom or ballroom.
Because she looks like a boss in this coat.
Nasty Luther, like a different Luther? It's not just Lena being mean?
No.
Helen Slater here. So fun to know that you're hosting a podcast called Supergirl Radio.
Welcome to Supergirl Radio, your source for all things related to the character of Kara Zor-El. My name is Rebecca Johnson.
I'm Morgan Glennon.
And we are live and wired on the DC TV podcast YouTube channel and the Supergirl Radio Facebook page to check in on the CW Supergirls. Stas Nair, you might remember him on Supergirl as William Day, the best baker.
And babysitter, although the worst
babysitter, but the best baker.
The best baker this small town has ever seen.
In National City. So we're going to check in on what Stas Nair is up to by reviewing and discussing Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire. We're going to be talking about both parts. Also, there's kind of a two-part in why we're doing this, because I'm always trying to force Morgan to watch Zack Snyder movies and Green Lantern movies too.
And Green Lantern movies.
These are always good excuses.
One of these days she's gonna get me.
So there's multiple
there's layers.
Yes, like an onion. Layers. Yeah, we want to make sure that we're up to date on what Stas is doing, but also I'm, making sure that Morgan's up to date on Zack Snyder movies. So we're gonna be talking about all that. But I think we need to get to the news.
Superman director James Gunn and DC released the first official look at David
Cornsweet.
Cornsweet.
I remember it because it's weird. Like, it sounds weird. Like,
it sounds like that shouldn't be it. Yeah, it sounds like that can't possibly be right.
But I think it is.
I think it is.
Yes.
David Cornsweet as Superman in the upcoming film releasing on July 11th, 2025. And in this photo, Superman, he is putting on his boots. He's getting ready. They're telling you to get ready
movie. He's getting ready. Maybe it's the opposite. Maybe he's taking.
Oh, maybe off. He's like, you know what? Whatever's happening outside, not my problem. I just got a new package from Amazon. Just got these fresh new kicks from DSW. I'm gonna try them on. I saw my favorite meme that I've seen using this photo is like the picture of him in like a Foot Locker.
Yes,
so good. I also saw another one with like Al Bundy helping him with the shoes.
Who was a famous TV shoe salesman.
Yes,
on Married with Children. So this image is the first official look at David Cornsweet as Superman in just the Superman movie. It's no longer called Superman Legacy. It is just Superman.
Oh,
we now have. Is this the first time we've seen the release date? Did we know it was July 11th before?
I didn't, but that doesn't mean that we as a collective.
Yes.
Didn't.
Okay. Yes. This release date was the first that I had seen it. So there is that. And so Superman is wearing his Superman suit. You can clearly see the S symbol here, the S shield. He's also dirty.
Yeah.
So maybe he has been in the fight for a little while. I'm sure it does not smell great. whatever it is, he needs to clean his super suit.
He needs to get like a Tide Pod out.
Yes. There is a little bit of a hint of Trunks, which if you're a Trunks on Superman person, this is like a big day
Trunks
for you.
Man.
I am not really a fan of the Trunks.
Big day for the Trunks bros out there. I didn't even notice that. That's really funny.
It's hard to see, but it looks like there's Trunks there. I'm not a big Trunks person, but for people who are like, oh my gosh, Superman has to have the red Trunks, this is, I guess, for you. Also,
goes out to you.
Yeah, the shout out to you is the Trunk people, the red Trunks people. I'm not sure what's happening in the distance. It's some big laser beam thing shot up in the sky. It's at night. It looks like it's purple and green. So I wonder if Lex has anything to do with this. There's a night sky, maybe Metropolis in the background. And Superman is in a real high rise, nice fancy apartment.
Yeah. For Superman. Living it up. Floor to ceiling windows. Superman. Congratulations.
On a reporter's salary. Daily Planet is doing
most
well.
Unrealistic thing that is happening in this photo for sure.
Now, I don't know if we know if, Bunsen is Bunsen here from the news.
Obviously was trying to, oh boy.
There goes the ring
fully,
light.
Fully over. We're gonna need a he's now knocked it completely off the desk, so we're gonna need one of those little like
boop, yeah boop, boop. I'm glad we have that for these specific instances.
Yeah, this is the first time he's actually knocked it completely off the desk before. So that was fun. He wanted to get close. Yes, Bunsen.
Oh, yeah. He wanted to peer at
the details of the photo, because as you know, Bunsen's a big trunk man.
he's big on the red trunks.
He's like, I didn't notice the trunks the first time. I have to like sort of get up in there and check it out. But Bunsen said he liked the photo. He thought it was kind of a weird for a first shot. I'm just going to keep recounting funny memes I've seen with this photo online. I saw another one where he has like, they photoshopped in like the little AirPods, and they were like, Superman, something's going outside. Oh no, he's got the AirPods in. he doesn't notice that there's like an apocalypse going on in the background. He's just sort of vibing, putting on his shoes.
Yeah. To your point, I thought this was a weird first photo. The first photo we got of Henry Cavill as Superman in Man of Steel is the one where he's in front of like a kind of like a bank vault. I think it's happening during the fight in Smallville with Feyora. And so there's that where it was kind of very professionally done with lighting and effects and things, very intentionally a photo shoot for that first reveal. This one maybe was like a professional photo shoot.
Yeah.
But
it looks professionally done. It's just, I don't know, it's not like an action shot or any, he's sitting, he's just vibing.
And I also thought it was kind of strange. I mean, I think it's a good photo.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's, I thought they were going for this is not a Zack Snyder movie. It's going to be hope and optimism, Superman for all seasons. And then you show Superman like ignoring a world ending, chaos in the background.
he's taking a minute for himself. He's taking his me time to put it's, you know, it's like the oxygen mask thing. You know, you gotta take care of yourself before you can take care of others. He's like, my self-care is putting on my boots extremely slowly.
Even though I have super speed.
I like to really savor the feel of the shoe going into the boot.
Yeah, it is quite strange. It's everything that they said they were going to be against, but then it also is still everything that they said they were going to be. Like, it's dark. It's not very super colorful. Superman's not smiling. It's not real hopeful. It's kind of a downer. But I thought you were supposed to, you said you were going in this new, hopeful, optimistic direction. And
it's like me getting ready for work in the morning.
you don't feel like you want to do it.
Not another apocalypse.
Having said said that, I really want this movie to succeed because we really need that Woman of Tomorrow movie.
So she's going to show up in this one. So already I'm hyped about this one for the cameo.
So no matter how, what you think about this picture, this movie has to be a hit.
We've got it. We've got to support it. Now, will it be the greatest movie of all time, like the Flash movie? We can't guarantee that.
Nothing can be like the Flash movie.
Jaden Smith hasn't weighed in yet.
You forget that the height of the recommendations was that Tom Cruise approval.
Oh, yes, that's so true.
You got to
get Tom out there to see it. Then we'll know.
Tom Cruise and like Jaden Smith, and like Jaden right Smith. On the same level.
Those are the new Siskel and Ebert's, baby.
That's when you know you have a real, cinematic hit on your hands. So we really need Superman, the new Superman dropping July 11th, 2025. Make sure you buy your tickets and go support it in the theater.
Calendar. You're going to want to put it on the calendar. Don't forget like I did. Put it on the calendar and like make sure you give yourself enough time to slowly put on your shoes before going to the movies.
But yeah, we do not want Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow to become a tax write-off for Warner Brothers.
We don't. So we don't want that.
We need this movie to make a good deal of money. So no matter if Superman looks like he does not want to go save the world, go support this movie.
Haven't we all been there, really? He's a relatable, down-to-earth Superman. One who's like, oh, my job sucks.
So let's make sure that we get behind this one so that it can succeed. So we'll see what happens with the upcoming promotion. So it's a year and some change away from release. So we'll probably be getting more of these kinds of things as they start dripping it along. So we'll see what the next thing is. I don't know if Kara's S-Shield is going to be similar to Kal-El's. Could be. So we might be getting that as an issue. So, but it also could be different. Who knows what they're going to go with in this iteration. So we'll have to pay attention when that comes. Also, speaking of movie news, on April 30th, Warner Brothers Entertainment dropped a trailer for Justice League Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 3. Do you want to watch it and react to it live, Morgan? Or should we just point people to the trailer? I was going to leave that.
Did we do that for the Patreon, or was that a different trailer?
Was that trailer?
Oh, that was the My Adventures with Superman trailer.
Yes, that's what it was. Yes.
Maybe that could be maybe another Patreon.
Okay, exclusive. So we will do it in the Patreon exclusives for the Patreon supporters. So if you're interested in looking at the trailer for the third part three Crisis, Justice League Crisis on Infinite Earths part three, I should say the full title, a lot to say. But if you want to watch that trailer for yourself, it should be linked in the video description below. And if you're listening in the audio podcast version, it will be linked for you to go check out as well. So I think we're going to be getting some Supergirl in part three, of course, after she's had her whole Beauty and the Beast thing with a monitor. And we'll get to see the fallout for that. So very exciting stuff. We still don't know when that part three is coming out. It just says coming soon at the end. So who knows?
I know. I watched it today and I was like, I got to the end and I was like, yeah, I can't wait to find out like when the next part's going to drop. And then it was like coming soon. And I was like, you don't want to give us like a
ballpark, like a month? summer 2024
coming Q4. Something, give us something.
So we have no time frame, so we will cover it whenever it happens, whenever that is. So
I see Rachel in the chat said, yes. I will say there's a character in this trailer that I'm very hyped about because she hasn't appeared in anything in about a decade.
Oh,
I would love to know, Rachel, if you're still around, which character this is, because I watched it, unfortunately, in like vertical format. So she could have been on the edges, you know?
She might have missed that resizing and the replacement.
Yeah.
If you want to share who that character is, I can't remember. I watched it a couple of days ago, and so I can't remember. We'll have to look at it for the Patreon.
There's so many people in crisis, too. So it that doesn't help. The cast is very large.
Very large. But it looks like part three might have some Lex Luthor. So
yes, that was exciting. So was he in part one?
I don't think we've seen Lex.
I don't remember him having
a presence.
I don't want to say that we haven't and then like, yeah, we have for a second, and like, you know, whatever. But I don't remember him, so he hasn't really played a significant part, and it looks like he's popping up a lot more in part three.
Do we think it's the Lex Luthor who was tricked into confessing all of his crimes on Lois Lane's recorder? Do you remember that from Man of Tomorrow?
Yes, it's definitely him. He's like, I'm not falling for it again. And then he like just whispers to her, but I have done some crimes though. Some additional crimes. I'll tell you about later, girl. It's like it's his Achilles heel. He just cannot stop confessing to crimes. So Rachel says the female character she was talking about in the trailer, my girl Aya from Green Lantern, the animated series. She's in a frame with Jon Stewart for a second.
Well, maybe that means, Morgan, we should watch the Green Lantern animated series so that we
know. No. We gotta get ready.
We should probably do that for our Patreon exclusive.
We do like 3 years worth of homework just to understand these movies.
We still don't understand them. Also, Vincata in the chat says Crisis Part 3 comes out on July 16th. Okay, well, if that's true, we'll try to tentatively put it in our schedule to see if we can talk about it when it drops.
So, it does look like it. Something is coming out on July 16th.
Just put it in the trailer.
Oh, yeah. It looks like it. Yeah. I Googled. And the only way I know is that I Googled the exact date and the name. And it does look like it's July 16th. Although, like, when I Googled earlier today, like, Crisis Part 3 release date, nothing came up. So
you had to know what
you had
to search
to know
for.
The magic phrase.
You had to know the answer to the question you were searching for in order to find it.
Yeah. No. What is July 16th?
That makes a ton of sense. Okay, well, those are the news items that we had for this episode of Supergirl Radio. So let's get into discussing what we came here to discuss, which is Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire. And the IMDb description for this film reads, quote, when a peaceful settlement on the edge of a distant moon finds itself threatened by a tyrannical ruling force, a stranger living among its villagers becomes their best hope for survival, unquote. Morgan, since this is such a large, expansive universe, lots going on, I disagree with me if this is the worst approach to do in terms of how to discuss it.
Sure.
But I thought there's so many characters, there's so many things happening.
Lots happening.
I thought maybe the way we could kind of break down our discussion would really just be like we'll talk about like three major discussion points. But the first one I was curious about is what worked for you in this movie? What did you think the film did well? What captured your imagination? What character was interesting to you? What do you think worked well in this film?
Yeah, I think first my favorite character in the movie, I mentioned him in my little description below. It's that robot in the flower crown.
I
love that guy. That's him in the flower crown. He upgrades it at the end of the movie. We don't know why. It's kind of mysterious. It kind of has a little bit of Yellow Jackets feel to it. Like maybe he's like a cult leader now, and I hope that for him. Like it's a Midsommar thing, and like you're gonna go to the village at the end, and they're gonna be like, we all worship Robot Man, and he's going to be like, I am a benevolent god. Very on brand for me for the robot to be my favorite thing. This is a sort of a thing that always happens with me in that I love the robot. The robot bonds with like the young girl, the young village girl whose name I truly could not remember.
Sam.
Okay. I was really across the board. You're going to have to help me with all of these names.
There's a lot of characters.
I struggled. But he has like a nice conversation with her, and she makes that flower crown. She puts it on his head and the robot blushes. It's so adorable. He's like, oh, I'm feeling some non-robotic things. I love you. What? I didn't just say that. I have become human. And I just can't wait to see where his story goes in part two. So that's a very funny one. But that was like just off the top of my head. I was like, that guy rules.
Actually, I love Jimmy, too. And
He's got an it's Jimmy.
Yeah, it's Jimmy. We love Jimmys here on Supergirl Radio. I actually have a Jimmy. Let's see if I can full screen this. A Jimmy
collectible
Bluetooth speaker.
Oh, that's a speaker.
Yeah, I have two of them.
It's so good.
Because I think you're supposed to get two in order to make them work effectively, but I haven't tried them yet. I haven't taken them out of the box.
You're going to have like a whole surround sound system, but it's just little Jimmies. I would like it if you complimented the speaker, it did that blush. If you're like, Jimmy, looking good today.
I don't know if there's something about the lights. It says the collectible with a purpose. Don't be fooled though. What they lack in size, they're powerful wireless Bluetooth speakers. Don't be fooled though. What they lack in size, they make up with clear, powerful, mind-blowing sound. But I think they do have like the little lights on the forehead and everything. I also have a collectible. Like I was a big fan of Jimmy before. Like I even saw the movie. They have
he's the best.
Collectible steins. I went out and bought like
what? There's a Jimmy like drink.
Let me see if I can get into the
yes.
So I haven't opened it either because you know once you take it out of the box, it's not valuable anymore once it's out of the box. But I think the Bluetooth speakers they have Bluetooth a purpose.
Speakers.
I feel like I should try.
It's gonna be hard to not take those out and like you know you playing your tunes or you're like jamming along. Jimmy's jamming with you. All the Jimmys all around you. You've got like a dozen speaker children. You're like, yeah, Jimmy. I love it.
Yeah, I also really took to Jimmy. Jimmy is voiced by Anthony Hopkins. So there is that. Not portrayed by Anthony Hopkins. There was another man doing the actual acting. Dustin K. Thomer, who portrayed the physical form of Jimmy. I think that's how you pronounce his name. So Anthony Hopkins provided the voice for him, though. But I like that he does. I think you're right. He will. I think his arc is in his crown,
his little headdress. Yeah.
Because I like to think of like the deeper meaning of things that Jimmy as a character is a robot that was made and developed by what they call the Mechanicus Militarium, which is basically like the mother world army. And he is supposed to defend the royals. Like he is like a robot knight essentially. And so when the king is slain and Princess Issa is killed, there's no one else to protect. He's lost his purpose. And when he talks to the young lady, Sam, I think when she puts that flower crown on his head, I think he gets a little purpose back in him. And so I'll be curious to hear what your thoughts are as his head adornments progress.
Ooh.
and what you think that means. I would be very curious about that. But yeah, we do see him at the end wearing kind of a like horns, I think.
Yeah. He's got sort of like like stag horns on almost. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I've been thinking about figure out what that is connected to, because I did start to notice, I've seen this now three, four times, that there's a connection to the land, connection to nature. So Jimmy's kind of connected to nature through the crowns that he wears. Tarek rides the Bennu, which we'll talk about. Korra works alongside the Yoraki, which is basically like the space horse. And those characters are all connected to the earth, the land. And I was wondering if there was meaning to that, because the bad guys aren't as much. Like, Noble is kind of a cyborg robot guy. Hickman is killed by the Bennu. Harmata is like an evil spider alien lady. So there are characters that are kind of either anti-nature or not like nature. So I don't know. That's just been kind of swirling in my head.
I liked the evil spider lady. I thought she was fun. She was especially fun because I had a really funny, like, oh, I know that face. During the scene, I turned to my husband. I said, I know that spider lady. And he was like, weird sentence. So then I'm on my phone, of course, like Googling like spider lady Rebel Moon. And I thought it was the actress is Jenna Malone, who has been in a bunch of stuff. But I feel like The Hunger Games is like one of her more recent things. And I was just so happy that I had like got her. I was like, I knew that was Jenna Malone. I felt very accomplished myself at my actor spotting. But also
your
she
spidey
was like,
senses weren't
my tingling. Spidey senses, but also she was like a very scary spider lady. And and the spider lady fight scene, I think, was really good because you really got the impression like, wow, it would be hard to fight something with that many legs. just legs coming at you from everywhere.
It helps when you have heated light swords, like heated fire
that's
swords
gonna help. Yeah, the fire swords are gonna be a big help in that situation. No, she was great. Props.
That character's name is Harmata, which sounds a lot like Hamada. So I don't know if that's intentionally named after one of the former Warner Brothers executives who were there during the Justice League debacle or not. If anyone has confirmation of that in the live chat, let us know. But that's what I always assumed she was named after. And Geek Defense Initiative in the chat says that Jenna Malone recurs in Zack Snyder's work. And that is
She was in Sucker Punch.
She's in Sucker Punch. She was in Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Was she? Who was she in that one?
She was, I forget the character's name. I should know that. I hate myself.
Rebecca, right? I cannot believe that you don't know this.
she is a DC Comics character, but she's like such a lesser known character. Who is she? Jeanette Clyburn. Jeanette Clyburn is like a Star Labs. She's a head scientist at Star Labs in Metropolis.
Rachel says she was only in the Ultimate Edition of Batman v Superman.
That's true.
Geek Defense Initiative says she was Lois's contact in Star Labs. So we got some instant fact checking here.
I really liked her character in BVS because her character was like, she recognized Lois Lane's greatness. And I was like, yes, I'm on your side that you recognize.
We're all friends here. Loving Lois.
So she shows up in Zack Snyder's films quite a bit. So she enjoys working with him. So it's always fun that she sort of pops up. Even if he called her and was like, hey, can you be a weird spider alien lady? And she's like,
absolutely. Yes, I will sure. do it. Why not? Sounds wonderful. I'll steal some kids for you.
Okay, so we talked about Jimmy. Was there anything else that you thought was working for you in part one?
Yeah, so I liked the universe, the Rebel Moon universe. I liked the world building. Now, my small caveat to that is that it is Star Wars. But with that said, I like Star Wars. It's like, yeah, you could harp all day that, like, obviously this had originally been a pitch for a Star Wars movie, and maybe they should have found and replaced a couple more droids in the script. Whatever. Listen, you can make those excuses. I liked it. I thought it was fun. I was like, I like the Star Wars universe. Let's do a little fun thing over here in this corner. And then when they were like, no, thanks, he was like, yeah, sure. Okay. Well, it's not the, you know, it's called this thing now. And the bad guys have a different uniform. And I was like, you know what? That's fine. When when the character that fought the spider, and again, I'm terrible with all the characters.
Nemesis.
Yes. I knew she had like a pretty cool name. When her swords like turned bright red, they looked a lot like lightsabers, and that made me laugh a lot. respect, sure. I mean, yes, they're not lightsabers, but I mean, let's be honest, that's a technicality, isn't it? Like, legit just lightsabers.
Well, I will say there is a technicality to it, because it's not really so much the swords that are the source of the power. It's her gauntlets.
And,
I believe we find out about that in part two.
Oh, okay.
So we'll give more information. So there is a technical difference.
Yes.
Between Nemesis' swords and Star Wars lightsabers. There is a technicality.
I kind of liked how brazen it was. It was like, yeah, no, this was a Star Wars pitch. But then I thought, why can't I just make it myself? And I was like, you know what? Respect.
Well, here's the thing that I thought about when I was watching this for the first time, because I thought, you know, it is kind of like Star Wars. It starts with like a, you know, a humble farmer.
They couldn't do the scroll, right? But no. they did just have Anthony Hopkins read it, which I thought was also very good. I was like, bravo.
It is something of a voice scroll, if you will. Yeah, yeah. And they do the original Star Wars, like episode 4 is what it's called now, A New Hope. It's famous for starting, like the movie starts on like a big Star Destroyer that's like coming over your head, and like cinema people will talk about it. Oh, how you're seeing the sides and the scope of the dark side and the Empire, and it's really impressive. And they sort of do that in this movie at the beginning with the big ship. So there is some Star Wars stuff to it. Korra is kind of like the farm Luke Skywalker. You know, they didn't have like the dual moons, I don't think. There's like a big Saturn ring kind of behind her.
They clean themselves from that.
Yeah. So there are a lot of Star Wars things that are connected to it. And Zack Snyder will tell you, like, he was very inspired with Star Wars when he was a kid, and it made him want to make movies. And so there, I think, are intentional nods to Star Wars in there. He's a big fan. He dressed up as Luke Skywalker for Halloween one year. And he actually did a great job. He looked just like him. But what I thought was great about it is that maybe in the last act of the movie, there's something that twisted it for me, where I was like, ah, this is where they break free from the Star Wars tropes, because one of the other Star Wars riffs, I would say, not rip-offs, but a riff on Star Wars, is the Kai character, who is sort of the rogue pilot who they find in the cantina. Oh, yeah. And so who is going to help them find the other characters and sort of get everybody together. So they meet this Kai character, and he's kind of the Han Solo of the team. He is a kind of a rogue. He's kind of, you know, he rolls with the punches, whether he's good or bad. He has a ship that he pilots. But what I thought was great was that Kai betrays them. Kai is not a good guy. He's not one of them.
Twist.
And so when that happens, when he basically sets them up for capture and has one of them like tells Gunner to kill Korra, I was like, Han Solo would never do that. That is not what Han Solo
would. Not my Han.
So I did like that. I actually liked Rebel Moon more when it broke from the Star Wars tropes. So once Kai had that betrayal, I was like, I like this so much more. So that's kind of where I thought that it really kind of started to get interesting for me.
Yeah. And I liked sort of the general conceit of it, which is like we have to collect this ragtag band of like different people to help us fight and help us like fight be the resistance on this small for this small farming community. And I liked that. I wish that we'll get into it in the dislikes. I wish that the individual characters that they pick up along the way stood out to me a little bit more, but I like the general idea of like getting this like ragtag band all together. And I did think, you know, I thought all the actors were good. They were all good. They were given various levels of like things to do. But I thought that it was a fun cast for sure. That they got together in this one. So that's another like from of mine.
Okay. Do you have any more before I get to mine?
Yeah, I think those are kind of my major ones. I thought that like the idea, the world building, I was kind of in, you know, I like, ooh, this is like a fun sci-fi world. I like kind of like what they're doing with it. I like that we're meeting different characters and they have like really cool character designs and they all have their own little thing. So I liked that. Yeah, that was, those are, and of course the robot obsessed with.
He was, I think Jimmy is the standout of the Rebel Moon universe for sure. Well, I guess to get to mine, I'll just kind of rattle them off. And if you want to talk about them, feel free to. I guess in terms of the filmmaking, I really loved the title card over the Saturn-like planet in the background of Korra and her Yuraki that she's farming with on Belt. I just really liked how that was set up, and the look of it I thought was really nice. It really kind of put me there with Korra on her little small farming community that she has adopted for the last two quote seasons, I guess, or like years. I don't know what season means in the space universe.
No, I wasn't sure.
But I really liked it because it showed like, you know, the vastness and largeness, the large size of space with the planet in the background, and Korra and the Yuraki are really small and are doing something very humble. You know, she's working the land. She's acting like a farmer. She's dirty. It seems late. She's like the only one still working. So I think that really put me in there with Korra right in the get-go that I was like, oh, I like her already. You didn't even have to do a lot of work to get me to like her because I'm already kind of on her side. And even in that scene where she is, she picks up the dirt and she's sort of like kind of holds the dirt in her hand. She even like rubs her hand in the dirt. That's kind of a Zack Snyder filmmaking trademark. He also has Darkseid do that in Zack Snyder's Justice League. So some of those things are kind of repeated in his work. I thought the cinematography in some of those scenes on Velt was very good. Zack Snyder was the director of photography for this one as well as the director. Lots of quality trademark slow-mo shots from him of the seeds, and especially when Korra drops the seeds when she sees the big ship called the King's Gaze over Velt. I really liked that.
That reminds me of another thing I liked. The concept of the King's Gaze ship. Yes. I thought was really cool, which is that it has like, it's this big ship and it has this like basically little gunner section that can go like, if it looks at you. Yeah. Cause when they were talking about it early in the movie, they're like, you don't want the King's gaze upon you. And it was like, I thought it felt very Shakespearean. I was like, oh no, not the King looking at you from afar. But when you get to the end, you're like, oh no, the King's gaze is like a real thing. It's just like
a ship.
It's a big gun up there. And you really don't want it to look at you because it will shoot you. And I liked that. I liked that they sort of set it up in the beginning where it seems very like poetical and like, oh my God, you have to watch out for the King's gaze. And you think, oh, what they mean is like, you know, the government, this government looking at you. Yeah, yeah, big brother. But what they really meant is that little guy in the gunner thing. You don't want him looking at you.
He will kill you.
He will get you.
Yeah, and I guess it is also still somewhat metaphorical. Even though the king is slain, the king is dead in the story at the time, there's still somebody over you, like watching you. And kind of, you know, you always have to be aware of what's happening at all times. So That was pretty cool. I didn't pick up on the king's gaze until the end when they talked about it as a ship. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I think they mentioned it a little bit earlier in the movie about, like, well, you got to watch out for the king's gaze. And I just thought it was sort of like, you know, like a flowery way of being like, you have to watch out that the, you know, this, you know, this apparatus is going to come down on you. But they meant like an actual ship.
It is good to pay attention to those things and to connect those dots. I also thought there were some really great action sequences. Of course, Zack Snyder is known for his action sequences. Two of the big standouts for me were Cora and Jimmy saving Sam from essentially being assaulted, I guess is a good way to say that, on Velt by the Motherworld guard people. They were doing bad things to her and threatening to do bad things to her. And Cora said, not in my farming community. And then Jimmy actually came in and protected her, which I thought was cool. I don't know.
I mean, Jimmy is like, no, not my girl, not my girl.
He had his flower crown on.
He did. I was like, I love you, Jimmy. What a good guy. What a good robot.
So I thought that was a great sequence. And then another standout was Tarek actually riding the
Bindu. Oh, that was cool.
So I thought that was a great sequence in terms of having this creature that looked pretty realistic for the most part, and having a really good emotional sequence, I thought was good because Tarek bonds with the Bennu creature over being shackled. And I thought that was actually pretty clever. And the way that was done was very good. And looks like Bunsen came to talk about the Bennu. Bunsen
really liked that section of the movie. He's like, he loves birds. Mm. As you would imagine, any cat does, and he liked watching the big bird fly around.
Yeah,
he's like, I still think that personally, I could take him if I needed to. but no, I thought that the flying scene was really cool. I thought that they did a really nice job on that, and the special effects on that as well, which obviously were probably not very easy. You know, you have him riding a giant bird through the sky and stuff like that, but the special effects looked really great.
Yeah, I thought that sequence was good. Maybe in if there was a part three, maybe there should be a high fantasy feline character.
I agree. I like let's bring in something for Bunsen. Let's bring in like a big ferocious cat. No, not the hair. You got to let go of the hair tie. We're gonna need 1 second.
Okay. Well, I'll go into the chat while you're doing that. Let's see. Geek Defense Initiative says just one minor nitpick. King's Gaze seems to be a mix between a carrier and a battlecruiser, not a dreadnought. They did talk about dreadnoughts a lot in the film, so that is interesting. I don't personally know what the difference is, so if you can help us understand that, that would be awesome. And also, Geek Defense Initiative says that scene reminded me of John Carter. I've heard, I know John Carter didn't do well at the box office, but I've actually heard good things about John Carter. So I probably should. I think I would enjoy it. So I'll have to check that out. Is it streaming anywhere? I don't even know.
Is it on Max? We'll never know.
Things that are on Max, or things that should be on Max, are not on Max.
They're just not on there. So
so there is that. So I guess I will also say that, let's see, I'm trying to go through. So one of the kind of technical things that I really enjoyed about this film is actually what I don't like about the Crisis animated films is that in the Justice League Crisis on Infinite Earths, you never know where you are. You could be on Earth 17, you could be on Earth 3. You don't know which character is from which Earth. You never know. I can't speak for everybody. I never know where we are, who we're talking to. I don't know what's going on. Are we back on Earth 2? Is that Steve Trevor dying in the street? I don't know. I'm just guessing.
we may never know.
But what I liked about Rebel Moon was that it held my hand a little bit, because you do as an audience member jump to different places quite a bit. So you go to the port city of Providence in Velt. You go to the Frontier Homestead in New Wodey, I think is how you pronounce that. You go to Dagus, you go to Pollux, you go to the home planet of King Levitica. And then you also go to Gondabal, which is an unregistered trade depot. All of those places were identified. I knew where they were. They were all different in terms of what they looked like, what they were, what the objective was there. So it helped me track along the journey of where these rebels were going to. And so I really appreciated that. I didn't feel very confused about what was happening or where we were. So that was nice. I appreciated. Normally, I don't like to have my hand held, but when I'm going to different places and meeting new people, it does help as an audience member to do that kind of thing for me. So I really, really appreciated that.
Yeah, there was a real sense of where you were in space and time that was really just missing from those Crisis movies where we're like, wait, what's happening now? Nope, next scene. We're in the next scene already.
Yeah, so that was refreshing to me. The other thing that I will mention that I kind of wanted to put forth during my what worked for me was I always like, especially when I'm watching a Zack Snyder film, is I want to have something to sort of chew on in terms of the story and the themes and everything. And I wanted to see what you thought about this because I'm still trying to figure out what I think about it. So there's the Mother World, which I think the Mother World is kind of the big bad in the movie. It's a collection of planets where the Imperium was headquartered. The Imperium, I guess, is the sort of the big bad. So you have the Mother World. So emphasis on the mother. Then you have the head of the community of Velt is called the Father. And Gunner calls him their beloved father, their beloved father. And so I was curious if you thought there was something to, if this was just me reaching, but like there's the mother world and then there's fathers in this series of films. And I hate to say it, but I think the fathers are kind of terrible. You have and Mother World is also terrible, but Sindri, who's the father,
you gotta rebel against your parents.
but the head of the community of Velt, the father, he lets them down. I guess it's really kind of Gunner's fault.
It's kind of Gunner's fault, yeah. Honestly. I don't think that he had it like in hand in any way. I think he was like, no, I've got this handled. It's like, sir, you're about to die either way. But I do not think that Gunner made it better.
But so the father of the community is murdered by Admiral Atticus Noble. He's killed. Then you have the slain king. Whose name I think is Athander. He is the father of Issa. He's the king. He is slain, but his daughter is also slain and killed. They're assassinated. He's dead. Then Cora's family was, her entire family was killed by Balisarius, who is this like regent military guy, and he becomes her adoptive father. So I just started to like notice a lot of things about fathers in here. There's obviously also some mother stuff in here as well. Spider Lady Harmata, she seemed to be doing something with the children. So I don't know. Is that a reach for me to think that there's like a mother father theme that I haven't wrapped my brain around?
But I do think that there is probably something there. I'll be interested when I watch part two to see if I feel like the theme goes through. I did like the theme of like, rebellion and, you know, sort of the horrors of colonization and things like that, where, you know, even some of the villainous characters, at least Spider Lady, even Nemesis isn't that happy about having, you know, having to kill her because she was like, yeah, like it's her home was destroyed by this whole process. And that's why she was lashing out. So like, I don't feel good about having to kill her, but obviously she can't just be stealing kids all the time. But I do think that there was, like an interesting theme about, you know, rebelling against, against this sort of all powerful organization, and also how the colonization that this mother world had done on these various planets, and like the ways that it had really destroyed a lot of these places, the places that they didn't outright destroy, like Korra talks about in her flashback, which is what they did to her world. They destroy in other ways, like they did to the Spider Lady's world, or like they're doing to the farming community at Velt, which is like they're technically not killing them, but if they leave them with not enough to eat,
don't die of starvation.
They're still killing them, just killing them in a less dramatic way, and they don't care as long as they get what they need, which is their, you know, food for their, you know, ongoing struggles with the rebellion. So I do think it was a good theme overall, which we see also in like the Star Wars movies about, you know, the idea of rebellion and rebelling against this, you know, this big unfair force. And I thought that was an interesting theme that was all the way through Rebel Moon as well.
Okay. Thank you for helping me think through some of that. Cause I just started noticing like, why do they call them fathers? There's got to be a reason that the head of the community was called the father. So I thought that was
I like this. Geek Defense Initiative in the chat said, I feel like Hermada, which was the spider lady.
Yes.
because I'll never remember her name, is a warning about the danger that the main characters face of becoming like the mother world that after they defeat it. And I think that is something I think also in her story, you kind of see the fact that like people can do bad, or spider people can do bad things when they're put in bad situations. Mm. So I thought that was also a really interesting takeaway from that story, which is that like even Nemesis kind of felt like she was sympathetic. She wasn't, you know, she wasn't on board with her stealing babies and stuff.
Yeah.
Just get kids. But but she did feel bad because she knew what the spider lady had been through. And I do think I like that take that, you know, she's maybe a cautionary tale that like if they get so consumed with revenge, they could also become like the spider lady, where you've like lost perspective on things.
Yeah. And also I should mention Geek Defense Initiative says in the chat that Rebel Moon is in the antithesis to the positive portrayal of parenthood in the Snyderverse. So in the DC movies that Zack Snyder did, a lot of the parent figures were good, positive influences. You know, the Waynes, the Kents, all those figures were positive and very entreated very reverently in terms of how they affected Clark and Bruce and even Diana with Hippolyta and like Cyborg's parents and things like that, where there's usually a parent in there that's a positive influence. So that's why I kind of was thrown back a little bit by Rebel Moon, because I was like, oh, the parents are kind of not good in this. So that's what I've been trying to wrestle with, trying to figure out what I thought about that. Okay, so we've talked about, and I should say just a lot of the characters. I liked all of the characters. I liked Korra. I liked Jimmy. I liked Nemesis and Gunner and Titus and all these characters. I really actually, I think something that really worked for me were the characters. I thought they were all very distinct in who they were. Some of them had more story arc in this one than others, but there was not a character that I thought was like, this character didn't need to be here, or this was not a great characterization. I thought even some of the bad guys I thought were very interesting. So I will say that that's also something that worked for me, were the characters. So since we've talked about the things that we liked and we thought were good in the film, I guess we can critique it a little bit if we have any critiques to it. So Morgan, what did not work for you in Rebel Moon?
Oh, okay. I found the pacing to be a little tough of Rebel Moon. I thought when there were action sequences, they were really cool, but I thought that the pacing was just very slow. Like, and it wasn't so much slow as there was just like a lot of exposition dumping Which is tough when you're like, you're establishing a world and there's a lot of moving pieces. So I have sympathy, but there were a lot of scenes where it was just like one character being like, and here's my monologue about myself. And you're like, oh, okay. Oh, wow. We're still going, huh? There's a really extended flashback for Cora in particular, where she is just monologuing over it. And then we see the flashback, but she's like still monologuing over it. And I was like, I feel like we could have chosen one or the other. I don't know. It feels like we didn't need the visuals are kind of giving us the story. Maybe we didn't need the voiceover. I don't know. So the exposition issue, I think there was a lot of exposition dumps and it really affected the pacing of the movie, where it's like you kind of felt like you had to like sit through the exposition dumps to get to the next thing.
I will actually, if you'll hold your next thought,
I wanted
to jump in on that, because that was actually one of my critiques. Because one of the things I've always liked about Zack Snyder films is that they are visually immersive. Traditionally, one of his biggest filmmaking trademarks is that he, especially at the beginning of his films, he tells the story through visuals and music. And I've always thought that that was really cool, because it made me like have to pay attention. It made me get in there and the motions with the characters. And here it starts right at the beginning with voiceover narration. And I really don't like voiceover narration.
We're starting to info dump early.
I really don't like voiceover narration. And so that was one of my biggest critiques, is I was like, Why do this when maybe you could have done it visually to kind of portray it with visuals and music, versus having Anthony Hopkins tell us what was happening. So I actually would echo that critique, is that I think maybe some of that could have been a more visual way of storytelling.
Yeah. I thought that they, especially in some instances, like in the Cora flashback where they did have visuals, I was like, I feel like we don't need the voiceover now, because like we're seeing it. So
it's like that thing from what's the Disney villain that Emma Stone played?
Cruella.
Why was I blanking on Cruella? But it's like in that movie where she, like, you see like Cruella running, and she in the voiceover says, "I was running." And it's like, no, you don't have to tell me that. I see you doing it.
Can't see that with our eyes.
Yeah. So I think there is something to be said about like letting the viewer go on that journey.
Yeah. I agree. So coming into this movie, I will say I didn't know very much about it. The one thing that I knew was from my group chat with my friends who had watched it back in like December, and they were like, it's A Bug's Life. It's the movie A Bug's Life. And so I did, to be fair, I did go in being like, I've heard it's A Bug's Life. I think that's very funny. So after watching the movie, and I was like, listen, I haven't seen A Bug's Life in so long. I still wouldn't be able to tell you that it was A Bug's Life. I did Google search Rebel Moon, A Bug's Life. And I
are there articles?
There are articles. And there's a YouTube video I didn't watch, but I am kind of dying to, because I was like, again, I haven't seen A Bug's Life in probably like 10 plus years. So it could be anything. But the reason that that Rebel Moon and A Bug's Life are very similar is hilariously because they're both sort of patterned off of Seven Samurai. Apparently. Oh, yes.
Zack Snyder is a big fan of Akira Kurosawa. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, okay, that's why it's A Bug's Life. That's a fun fact I thought was funny. I didn't actually hold that against the movie in any way. I should have probably, there's not like a neutral section where I could just point out that it's A Bug's Life.
His Justice League film is also very Seven Samurai. That's just kind of the nature of the you've got to recruit team members for your cause.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's Seven Samurai, no matter what you do.
I've never seen Seven Samurai, so I don't have like a frame of reference to compare it to. But my next sort of negatives does dovetail off of that, which is that I felt like the premise is like, we have to go and collect sort of the Pokemon scattered through the realm of people who are, we got to catch them all, of these people who are going to help us defend Velt. And I just felt like I wished I had more character from each of the characters that they interact with and that they bring to their side. All of the characters felt, at least in this first part, like a little bit one-dimensional, where like you asked again, I'm bad with names, but I don't think it's a good sign that like I can't remember anybody's name from this.
It might have been maybe too many characters. I don't know.
Yeah, like I mean, maybe he was going for all seven of those samurai. I don't know.
Obviously, actually, there are seven in the poster.
There are seven of them, so I'm going for all seven. Listen, I can't forget the robot. That's not going to happen.
he's necessary to the team.
But I wouldn't have been able to tell you the guy from Sons of Anarchy what his actual name was if you if you asked me on Point of Death.
his name is Kai. I don't want you to die.
Yeah, I didn't know about Nemesis until you said it, and then I was like, that sounds right. I only remember William Day's character's name is like Tarak, only because I was like, hey, it's William Day. So I think that sort of your mileage varies there. And the other guy was like a general of some kind, but I mm-hmm. couldn't tell you what his like formal name is. So I think that's sort of a, yeah, Titus. I think that's sort of a bad sign in terms of like if you're building an ensemble, like you want the characters to kind of be more memorable. And if they're not that memorable, maybe you cut down on a couple of characters. Maybe you have a couple less so that you can focus in a little bit more on the people that you do have. Now, I do give it a little leeway because it's a part one of a two-part. And she spent most of part one like gathering everyone together. But still in all, I feel like I wish I had gotten a little bit more personality out of everybody. They're all a little bit one note. And I just wish that there was like a little bit more to them. I liked Michael, what's his name? Michael Husseman or something like that. He's been in everything. He was the gunner character.
Ah, yes. Was he on Game of Thrones? I heard that he and Ed Skrein or Skrine, who plays Noble, were both on Game of Thrones.
Yes, he was on Game of Thrones. He played one of Daenerys's like love interests briefly. He was also in, I want to say he was on the show Nashville. I don't know. He's been in a bunch of stuff. So when I saw him pop up, I was like, who's him on? What's up? What's up, buddy? How you living? Always excited to see him pop up on stuff. His sort of thing is like default handsome, charming guy. Feel like he played it really well here as well. Listen, you have a niche. You should just go with it. He wasn't in. Rachel, when was he in Orphan Black?
Rachel thinks he was Tara's ex.
I mean, that feels right. He was probably like a charming guy from her past. I think he did a great job being handsome and charming. I think like I didn't have any issues with any of the actors per se. But I just thought I wanted to look a little bit more from the characters, and I wanted a little bit more from the character interactions. I think part of the fun of these like, you know, ragtag groups is that usually there's like a little bit of a, you know, meshing of personalities, people getting along, people not getting along. She just kind of picked people up at random, and then they were just kind of like standing next to her afterwards in like the next scene. And I was like, so everybody's just like straight chilling. Everybody's doing great. We're all loving life. It's like a summer camp here, or like what's going on? So I wanted a little bit more character interaction, I think. So that was sort of a negative for me, is that I think, you know, the format of the movie could lend itself to more of that sort of character development, character interaction, character like bonds with each other, different characters having different kind of relationships. And I feel like besides Korra and Gunnar, and the other characters are just kind of Korra and Gunnar and the guy who betrayed them.
Yes.
Yeah. Hi.
Oh, you're going to learn his name before.
I'm going to get it. The Sons of Anarchy guy, of course. And that's just because, like, I feel like all of the really handsome men were just like, would talk to Cora and they'd be like, hello. Like, oh, hello, sir. Oh, hi. yeah, so that was my big critique, is that I wish that the characters were a little bit stronger out of the gate, and that the interactions with them were a little bit more interesting. And I do think that, like, part of it is that they were just shoving in a lot of people into this one movie, where they were also doing a lot of, like, world building, and there were a lot of action sequences, and so there weren't, like, a lot of room for character interactions. But I think, for me at least, like, the kind of stuff that I usually like is a little bit more character driven, and so there were some scenes where I was, like, struggling a little bit, because I was just like, I don't know, I don't feel like I know these people very well.
I think that's a fair critique. I think one of the ways maybe you could fix that is less characters. Maybe if she recruits, like, half of them in part one, and then part two she recruits the other half or something like that.
Yeah.
It is a lot of characters, so I think that's a fair critique. I will say, in defense of the Rebel Moon films, is that there are supposed to be director's cuts that will also be released that will have more footage and that will be longer, of course. So there's a potential that some of that stuff might be in the director's cuts, which I won't force you to watch. but
I do,
if you wanted more character, there's a potential that maybe those director's cuts will have that stuff in there.
Like, weirdly enough, I think if they wanted to keep this amount of characters, this could have been a really fun TV show where, because there is something very episodic about the movie, in that she, like, will go to a different place and pick up, like, a new little friend, and then go to a different place and pick up a new friend, and just kind of go, you know, she's gathering her crew the way that Sailor Moon gathered her Sailor Scout. You know, this is a really niche reference for all the other.
I don't understand it, but I know you love it. So
all the other people who grew up with Sailor Moon. But yeah, like, it was like, so I feel like you could have done a TV show version of this, where she, like, has an episode with each of these characters where she, like, you know, they go into their backstory and they learn about them, and then they move on and they meet the next character. And, like, you could see how in that scenario you could start to, like, pull in a little bit more about the characters and also have them interacting in a way, because you would have way more of a runway than, you know, this movie was a little over 2 hours. But yeah, in like 8-10 episode TV season, you could give everything a lot more room to breathe. So I'm going to be a little contrary and be like, I feel like this would have worked better as a TV show. Because that's, I just feel like it, there's an episodic nature to it that's, like, perfect setup for that sort of TV format that could have worked really well.
That's a fair question to ask. What does this need to be, a film, or could it be a television series? I would watch a Rebel Moon the TV show.
Me too.
I would be into it. That would give you more chances to world build. I think a lot of the stuff that's world building in the movie is kind of there in the props, in the flags, in some of the symbolism, the imagery, some of that stuff. But in a TV show, you could expand on that and explain what those things are. Noble's scepter thing that he beats people with, that has meaning behind it, but they don't really kind of go into what that is in the film. But maybe in a TV show, you could explain, like, why he carries this certain scepter around and what it means. So I think that's a fair thing to ask, is this the format to tell this story? Because not all stories need to be films. Not all stories need to be TV shows. So I think it's a fair question to say, what's the right format for this story? So I think that's totally fair. Were there any other things that didn't quite hit with you?
I have a big critique.
Okay.
Which is, why at no point did anyone want to get William Day a shirt?
He didn't need one. I think here's what I would say in regards to that. First, Stosner has great abs.
He does. Okay, so I have a second.
I have a second point. That was just point number one.
Okay.
That's the obvious superficial one. He's well, number two, he worked really hard to get those. Really,
he clearly did.
Number three, I think it's supposed to show that he was a servant, that he was owned by someone else, that he didn't have anything at this point in his life other than just the clothes he had on. He had nothing. And so I think that was supposed to be this is me really trying to justify it, that that he had nothing. He didn't even have a shirt that he could wear.
Yeah.
I think that's what that in story, in character, I think is supposed to
be. I had no issue with them initially finding him shirtless when he's like in indentured servitude. It's afterwards where nobody gives this poor man a shirt, where I'm like, what kind of friends are these people? Nobody's got a polo he can borrow or something.
What if he got cold? What if it rained?
Yeah, what if it's chilly? I also think that it was Stosner is always sort of covered in a sheen of like baby oil in this movie. Everybody else is completely normal temperatures. Prince Tarek is always sweating. He's always like a little dewy. He's always a little sweaty. His muscles are always gleaming. His chest is always just sparkling. And you're just like, what's happening here? Everybody else is in like a Star Wars movie. He is a full Harlequin romance novel cover. I was just like, on his behalf, I was just like, this is a little ridiculous. Like, we get to the end of the movie. They had a dramatic battle. He's standing there, still covered in like baby oil, his long hair flowing in the breeze. And I'm like, could someone get the man a shirt? Like, he earned it now.
I think there is something of a fair point about that, because what if he needed armor? What if he needed protection? I cannot remember at the end of the movie. I would have to look it up. When they're riding the horses, does he have a shirt on then?
That is a great question. I actually don't know. I think at that point, I just assumed he had no shirt on because it's what I got used to. Usually you watch these movies and you're like, wow, they're really objectifying that woman. And this is one of the, with this, I mean, it's not like it doesn't ever happen, but this movie I watched, I said, wow, they're really objectifying that man.
Yeah, I think that it's supposed to have a story and character, a reasoning, but I think it's a fair point that by the end, I think
by the end, he should have had one shirt. They should have found him one shirt by the end.
We'll see if in part two, maybe he gets new clothes.
I mean, a big part of me hopes that he's always just kind of shirtless and gleaming throughout this entire series. But I do feel like it would be nice for him to get a shirt. Everybody else seems like sometimes a little chilly, and he's sitting there like, is this the sweatiest man alive? Like,
maybe he's are you hot?
I run hot.
Yeah.
So, like, sure you do.
Yeah, no, I think it's a fair critique to say.
I also, going back to William Day, our good buddy Stosner's character, I wasn't 100% clear on his backstory, possibly because I missed it. But at the end, they talk about him being like a prince. And I was like, whoa, what did I miss? And my husband was like, I think he's just like a prince of like a different planet. And I was like, okay. But I feel like this is maybe user error, because they maybe went into his backstory in the movie, but it's possible they didn't, and it confused me.
They don't in part
okay,
one.
Thank God.
Part two will expand more on Tarek's story. And
I felt like it could have been part of like one of those info dumps where I just like briefly zoned out, like my brain just left my body and then came back and I missed the important information or something. But
no, though, we'll get to know Tarek a little more in part two, and even understand maybe his connection to the Bennu and why he was able to do that, and more about his royal heritage. So we'll find out more about that. But to that point, I will say one of the things that also, if I was to give notes on the script, one of the things that I thought was repetitive at the end was when they all get captured, when Kai betrays them and they all get put in those like skeletal things, which are actually kind of terrifying. And it's really kind of a sicko thing to do, to put like a nail or whatever that was through the back of somebody's head. Yeah, that was really, really evil to do. But in that scene, they sort of give the bios of everybody twice.
Right. Yes, they do.
So
do that.
Kai goes around to all the people and he's like, oh, Nemesis, she is blah, 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 blah. And here's Tarek, who is blah, 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 blah. And then Noble comes into the scene and he's like, oh, yes, Nemesis from blah, 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 blah. And then he goes, and Tarek. But, and I was like, we just did the bio rundown. We just introduced who these people were. And now we're introducing them a second time. So if I was to give notes, I would have had Noble do that, you know, one time. And just, and just have go around that circle telling their stories from him. Because he has the king's gaze. So he would know all about these people. And so I think it would have been better, and it would have made it tighter, I think, to have that big info dump about all their characters in just one swoop instead of like doing it twice. Because I was like, ah, why did we do this twice?
Yeah.
So that's I would give notes on that.
I thought about that as well. I also thought maybe it would have been better to just get the info dumps while we were meeting each character, like what's their backstory, what's their thing? And then we wouldn't have even needed that sort of round robin info dump at the end, because you're right. It felt a little repetitive. And at the end, when they sort of mentioned a couple of things, I went, oh, really? Like, but at that point, like we're in like the last, I don't know, 20 minutes in the movie. I feel like you maybe want to get to know the characters a little bit more previous and not just get like a bunch of info dumps about them at the end. And some of them, some of the info dumps, as you mentioned, were repetitive, and some of them were like information I wasn't aware of, and that's kind of like a disconcerting feeling. In like the last 20 minutes of a 2-hour movie, you're like, oh, that's his deal.
I do kind of like that the big bad knows like all the details of their lives, though. That I think is scary. But to your point, I think some of that stuff we should know about them before we get to that point. That's kind of determining, I guess, how you want to tell that story. But I definitely think you should only tell it once, though.
Yeah.
So that would be my big critique there.
And I want to say, like, my last critique is probably Korra. So I really like her character. I like how, like, cool she is and how kick butt she is. The actress was a little bit less successful for me. Like the character, I think, is supposed to be a little bit more reserved and a little bit traumatized by her experiences and not really trusting other people. So I get that, but I do feel like the actress played it all a little bit flat. So I'll be interested to see if I feel different in part two. But I do, you know, I liked Korra, like with sort of like an asterisk that I kind of wanted a little bit more, from that character. But I think as a main character, she is very cool. And I think the action sequences she's in are always really neat, especially the last action sequence where they're like fighting high above, and I don't know, she broke every bone in every one of that man's arms.
Yeah, and she really mangled him up.
I was like, oh god.
too many things are like cracking and popping.
I was like, oh, I had to like watch like this. I was like, no.
I've dislocated my shoulder 4 times and I cannot watch scenes like that. I'm like,
yeah, honestly, I'm not great with gore, but like there was just something about like an arm being in like a position it shouldn't be in that like inherently creeps me out.
No, I don't like it either.
So I didn't like that, but I did like the all out fight where she almost falls off and she has to climb back up. It was very cool. There's like a, you know, big sense of stakes. I can't believe that he survived having every bone in his body broken essentially and then tossed off of that thing.
So I don't think he's human. He is,
yeah,
kind of like
seen that way. Is he like a cyborg thingy?
I think we'll learn more about him in part two.
Because he goes, they like sort of upload him into the Matrix. and then he goes to go talk to the, what's he, like a
Balisarius.
He's known as a regent.
He's also part of like the Senate, and he is Korra's adoptive father, who killed every member of her family.
Uncool. Yeah. So they get to like meet on this like ice thing, and he's like, "I'm disappointed in you," and the guy. All of my bones are broken. And he was like, all right, back to the grind. And he's like, do I get a day off from my bones? And he's like, no, sir. Back out he goes. I thought that was pretty cool too. I was like, oh, interesting. It made me want to know, understand more about the mechanics of the world. Like, oh, they can just like upload their consciousness somewhere and then like come back down, like how does that work? So I think that there was some cool sci-fi stuff in that little end, the end tag that I was interested in, even beyond obviously seeing my robot buddy with his new headdress, who was like, oh, he's upgraded.
he's really expanded what Sam did for him initially. Yeah, I did think that was kind of an interesting way to like send him out of wherever they were. Like Balisarius hits the ground and the ice and cracks it. And then eventually he falls through this like liquid gross stuff. But yeah, so that was pretty interesting. What were we talking about before that?
I was talking about the Korra.
Yes. Okay. So Korra, I will say some of that is a fair critique too, that she is a little bit flat and sort of, she's like trying to hide some of her past with a lot of these people. And so she's not giving anything away that she doesn't have to give away. And so I think there is a part of that character that needs to be a little reserved because she's kind of keeping that in. So I thought, in my opinion, Sophia Batella, I thought did a great job. I believed her as that character. I had no gripes with the way she portrayed it. I did have some other acting critiques about some other characters, though, like I'm trying to find to see if I can have an image of him. But unfortunately, Ray Fisher playing Darian Bloodaxe.
Oh, was that who that was?
Yeah, I thought he made some weird choices in the way he spoke. I don't know. I don't know what I couldn't figure out what he was going for with Darian Bloodaxe. But I liked seeing him in the film. It was good to see him back in a Zack Snyder movie, and he carried a really big gun and he did something super heroic, which is great. But in terms of the acting performances, that was one of the ones that I thought was a little weaker, in my opinion, just because I didn't connect what he was trying to go for. But I thought Sophia Batella, for me, I thought did a great job. And I think, we'll have to pay attention to her arc and see if that changes in part two and see if she grows and starts to be more vulnerable and how that develops from there. But I think for most of the performances, I thought were pretty good. The only one I was kind of unsure about what he was going for was Ray Fisher.
Yeah, I did like their character design, though. Him and his sister, they have like the forehead stuff, like the painted foreheads and stuff like that. I thought that it looked visually, it just looked cool. So I liked that. But yeah, I would agree. First of all, I didn't even recognize him with all like the makeup and the hair and everything. I had just seen something before we started recording that was like, oh, Ray Fisher. And I was like, he was in that? So mystery solved. Now I know who he was.
Yeah, there were a lot of Zack Snyder crew people in this. Ray Porter, who voiced Darkseid in Zack Snyder's Justice League, played Hickman, who gets mauled by the Bennu because he's not a good guy. So I guess Darkseid is once again playing a bad guy. But it was good to see him in there. So it was enjoyable to see some of those staples of Zack Snyder's films and his work come into play there. So that was fun. I guess, let's see if there were any other things for me that didn't quite work. I think those were my biggest critiques, the voiceover, the repetitiveness of that one scene, some of the acting choices I thought were tough to follow. But I think for the most part, most of it I thought worked for me in terms of like getting from A to B, like recruiting this team, trying to fight the rebellion, all of that kind of stuff. Not fight the rebellion. They are the rebellion.
They are
going
the rebellion
up
now.
Against the Imperium, the Mother World, whatever. I guess that's also maybe a critique that I would have is that I'm still, even though I've like dug up and researched the Mother World and gotten information from the Netflix guide to Rebel Moon, which is linked in the video description below, and also will be linked in the audio podcast show notes. I did some research on the Mother World, but I'm still kind of unclear as to how, even though I know where all these different locations are, which is very helpful, the Mother World, I don't fully understand as a planetary system.
Like, no, yeah, I agree. I was struggling with the universe a little bit in terms of like, wait, how does this work? Is it just like is it a planetary government? Are they just sort of colonizing random planets? Are they colonizing all the planets?
So I guess if we're going to go back to Star Wars, maybe this is the likeness to Star Wars. So you have the Empire in Star Wars. In Rebel Moon, we have the Imperium. So maybe those are kind of the same. And then you have like the, oh my gosh, why am I blanking? I'm such a bad Star Wars fan. The Death Star, the Death Star. So you have the Death Star, which is basically like a big planet, but kind of like an office building. It's like a big planetary office building where everybody has their conference rooms and their offices and stuff.
Yeah, I know. That's so true.
But you have like the Death Star. And I guess that's kind of like the Mother World is like you have this like main planet. And then all the other planets are around the Mother World. Like, I was very confused as to how, like, the planetary systems worked. That was also something that I could kind of get on board going to all the different planets. But I struggled with what exactly was the Mother World. That was one thing. It was very unclear to me.
Yeah, I wish that had been established a little bit better in terms of, like, what the Mother World is and how that works.
Yeah. So that would be, I guess, my other kind of big critique or question that I would have that didn't quite work for me in this first part. So I guess, Morgan, overall thoughts, what did you enjoy watching Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire?
Ooh. I liked it enough. I think that for me, a little bit of the pacing made it a little hard for me to like lock into the movie, just because I felt like the pacing issues were a little bit tough. Sometimes I was really into it and sometimes I was a little bored. So I am interested to see what is going to happen in part two. I think it was an enjoyable enough watch for me. And I think that the, sort of the Star Wars meets Seven Samurai concept is fun. I just wish that the characters had like a little bit, there were either a little less of them or they had a little bit more time to breathe. And I wish the pacing was a little bit more consistent between, you know, segments. Some segments felt a little too long. Some segments felt a little too short when they were meeting some of the various people and recruiting them. So I think, other than that, I think it was pretty enjoyable. I like a good sci-fi fantasy movie, so that's always fun.
Yeah, I like the mix of genres here. You have the Star Wars sort of space opera, but then you have kind of a Western feel to it. And then even some Arthurian legend with like a robot knight with the kings and the high fantasy of the Bennu and all of that. So there's a mix of genres here that I think is really interesting because it's not just one thing. So, and I like all of the actors. I like a lot of the visuals that are happening. So I am also interested to see what happens in part two.
What did you think, Bonson? Bonson slept through most of it, so I don't feel like he's going to be much help.
That's not really a critique on Rebel Moon. I'm sure Bonson sleeps through most things. Bonson
sleeps through most movies. he loved The Big Bird. He said he wanted you to know that. Loved The Big Bird. Loved the robot. Didn't you, Bonson? You loved the robot. This is like the fourth time he's been up here while we've been recording. I don't know why he's especially needy tonight.
Very interested in the Rebel Moon universe. So I think the part two will be interesting to see if any of our questions are answered, and if it ends up being a better experience for you, Morgan, and if it answers some of my questions that I have. We'll see what happens. I want to get to one question in the live chat that I think is worth mentioning here. Venkata asks, what do you think of the connections between Army of the Dead and Rebel Moon? The blue alien, Xanadite, in the bar is supposed to be of the same species as the zombie baby in Army of the Dead. If there is a connection there, I hope we get to see a culmination of that, because in Army of the Dead, if people go and watch that on Netflix, which is Zack Snyder's resurgence into the zombie genre, which has a zombie tiger, not only a zombie baby, but a zombie tiger. if you're interested in zombies, it's a pretty good watch. I hope we get to see more of the Army of the Dead universe, even though I'm not a zombie person. But I hope that I hope those questions are answered, because they do tease an alien situation with Army of the Dead at the beginning. So it could be cool to see if they get to expand on that. But I was glad that Stasner got a big feature film.
Me too.
You know, a big break. He's a good actor, and I always thought that Supergirl really underutilized him. So it was good to see that he got to, like, really and metaphorically and literally shine in this.
he was glittering all over that movie. No, I think that it was really nice that we got to see him do a lot more than he was able to do in Supergirl. Supergirl really didn't understand. They truly didn't know what they were doing when they introduced that character. He was kind of introduced as a love interest, but, like, I felt like they never really wrote the relationship compelling enough that anybody wanted to see it. And then after that, they were like, well, he's not a love interest anymore because no one wants that. Now he's here.
He just watched TV for one episode.
And you're like, okay, but, like, why is he here? Like, could you give him something to do? They're like, no, it's too late for that. He's here now. And you're like, okay, that poor guy must have been like, well, it's a paycheck. So at least in this movie, he had something to do. He got to do some real acting. He got to fly on a giant bird. He got to look like, as Rachel put it, either a romance novel cover or a Twilight werewolf.
All great.
I was glad to see Stasner, like, get his moment, get a bigger role in a bigger movie. So hopefully that can be like a jumping off point. Maybe hopefully we see more of Stasner around.
Yeah, so I'm glad to see him getting some big stuff. Well, before we get out of here, we have some Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire related snap judgments.
In the game of snap judgments, each person is presented with two options, but must only choose one. First instincts are recommended and explanations are unnecessary.
Which fictional animal transportation would you rather ride? The Binu or the Yuraki?
Yes. Yuraki, I think, is how they pronounce it. So I don't have an image of the Yuraki, but the Yuraki is basically like the space horse who helps farm at the beginning.
And those guys were cool.
And then the Binu is the giant bird-like creature who Tarek tames and rides around. I think I've had some bad experiences. A bad experience on a horse. I love horses, but I tried to ride one once and I was not a big fan of it. So I'm going to go the Binu, because at least... you have more to hold on to. Like, you can grab a feather, you could hold on to a lot. I think there's more, although I don't love heights, so that would also be a problem now that I think about that. If I had no fear that I would fall off of it, maybe I would do the Bennu. But I think I'm at a loss here because the horse, the space-like horse, I guess because of my fear of heights, maybe I'll go the Yuraki. Because at least I'm not that high up.
That's fair. I think that the Bennu, Aether, he accepts that people can be nice. Aether Tark teaches him that people, nice people, because he does kill the other guy like immediately. But they're like, nice people could be like a fun to take around for a ride. I think that the Bennu would be more fun to ride because we would be up in the air. I'm a little afraid of heights, but I feel like that bird had kind eyes, so he's like probably not gonna let me fall.
he did sort of try to shove Tarek off.
He did try to kill Tarek by sort of like gliding against the wall like Tarek first. But what Tarek was like, listen, I'm not into that. I'm not feeling that. Like, all right, gotcha. We're friends now. JK. So, while it might be a more terrifying experience, I'm going to go Bennu because at least I get like a good view of like the tree.
Yeah, you have a good view of the landscape.
Okay, you have to fight in a battle against the Mother World. Who do you recruit for your rebellion, General Titus or Nemesis?
So just to recap, since we did have difficulties with the name, so...
I did. It's kind of you to say we.
General Titus is the former military general who was fighting in the... gladiator stuff. He was not doing so well. I think he was kind of maybe drunk and very dirty. They had to talk him into trying to get himself out of that state because I think maybe he was in that gladiator position, maybe to almost like self-imposed punishment. Maybe he felt so guilty about what happened. They talk about how he had kind of caused, I guess, the death of his soldiers. His soldiers died under his watch. And so I think he's like punishing himself by doing this. But he is a military general. And then Nemesis, sort of lightsabers. So there's that. I think I'm going to pick General Titus. I think he's a general. So if I had to fight people, even though Nemesis is super cool, but if I needed a military strategy, I'm going to go with the general.
Yeah, Nemesis is super cool. I love her not lightsaber blades. I think her hat's cool. I like her whole vibe, really. But the thing is that I feel like if you're mounting a rebellion, you want somebody who's got strategy. It feels like the general is kind of your go-to. Like the general, it's right there in the name. He's a general. After he's washed and taken a shower, I feel like that's who I want on my team. Pre-shower, he was pretty gnarly. I'm not going to pick him. But post-shower, I pick the general.
Yeah, that gladiator coliseum was pretty gross. They had like blood all over the ground and stuff. It probably did not smell great there.
I can't imagine it did.
Well, that is going to take us out of Snap Judgments. No judgments on your Snap Judgments. That is going to do it for this episode of Supergirl Radio. If you'd like to contact us, you can post a comment on our website at supergirlradio.com. You can email us at supergirlradio@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on X and Instagram, all at Supergirl Radio. If you like what we do, we encourage you to give us a rating and write a review on Apple Podcasts. Supergirl Radio is part of the DC TV Podcasts and Multiverse of Color Network, so go check those out. If you would like to hang out with us as we go live and wired on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, you can do that on the DC TV Podcast YouTube channel and the Supergirl Radio Facebook page. And DC TV Podcast also has a TeePublic store. So if you're in need of some new DC TV related t-shirts, tank tops, sweatshirts, onesies, mugs, notebooks, pillows, or stickers, you can go to supergirlradio.com and click on the TeePublic store link at the top of the page.
And since we discussed Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire, we have added some designs for it in the DC TV Podcast TeePublic store that we would love to suggest.
Yeah, you can get some Rebel Moon merch. They have official merch. I'm actually wearing an official Rebel Moon shirt. But if you want some fan-created merch as well, there's some Korra stuff in there. And I also love these t-shirts where they like break down the colors used in a film. And so there's stuff related to Rebel Moon in there, talking about the color grading of the movie, which I think is pretty cool. So we definitely have some new Rebel Moon merch in the store. Well, we would also like to thank our legion of super sponsors for supporting the Supergirl Radio Patreon. These people are Michael, Anne-Marie, Yvonne, Nicola, Abby, Miriam, Nicole, Brian, Ethan, Danny, Majuba, Zachary, Annie, and Rachel. And if you'd like to support the Supergirl Radio Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/Supergirl Radio. And if you want to follow me on social media, you can check me out on Instagram at the Derby Kid and on the social media platform Vero at Derby Kid. And I have a YouTube channel that you can find at youtube.com/duckmilkprod.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Mojotastic. And you can also find me as a co-host on the Legendary Ladies podcast, which you can find most places at the Legendary Ladies, including our YouTube channel. This week, I believe I'm in a wedding. So the other ladies are, I think, going to do maybe a music episode. I think maybe about the new Dua Lipa album. And last week we did a pilot pod. For the pilot for, I keep wanting to call it Hawaii 5-0. It's not what it is.
That's a different show.
Different show entirely. Awesome Hawaii, but different. We did the pilot pod for NCIS Hawaii because they just canceled that show. I said on the podcast, I didn't think they ever canceled NCIS shows. And then immediately got told that they had just recently canceled like all of them. So I was very wrong. They've all gotten kind of canceled one by one recently. And I think that there's only like one or two still airing. I thought those NCIS shows just continued on forever. But, you know, you live and you learn. So we decided to go back and rediscover the pilot of NCIS Hawaii. Fun fact for the Love is Blind fans in the listenership. Vanessa Lachey is the main character of NCIS Hawaii, which I knew, but still surprised me when I started watching.
Is she like a law enforcement person?
Yeah,
she does she put all the perps in like these rooms where they have to talk through a wall?
What if she was like, what if like they had an episode where like two people fell in love, but like on the like between the walls or something, they're just like talking to each other? That's like a special Love is Blind episode of NCIS Hawaii. And she comes in at the end. She's like, why did you tell her that thing?
We'll let you out of jail if you do not want to marry this person by the end of this time period.
If you guys pick each other, you both get out of jail. High stakes, high rewards. Love is Blind, NCIS Hawaii.
I would watch that.
I would watch that too. I'm not proud. I'd watch that show.
Love is Blind is so stupid. Such and yet stupid, I always show. Watch it.
I watch every season as it comes out, but I'm like, what a stupid show. And then I like turn on the next episode.
That is very interesting. Well, I'm sorry it didn't work out for Vanessa Lachey, but she's still got Love is Blind. That's still
she's still
well.
Got that Love is Blind money, so she's going to be okay.
Okay. Well, that is going to do it for this episode of Supergirl Radio. But until next time, I'm still Rebecca Johnson.
And I'm still Morgan Glennon. And remember, there's a difference between justice and revenge.
McGurk! I love typing.
Do not mess with my Google Docs, Meeksy.
Supergirl Radio is going live every night of the week. How do you like it? Is becoming a human burrito a plus or a minus? I don't know. It does seem snug.
I mean, they say you are what you eat.
Cheer up.
I love that.
So I do a podcast called Supergirl Radio, and one of our segments is Lena Luthor, boardroom or ballroom. Because
really? She looks like a boss in this coat.
Nasty Luther, like a different Luther? It's not just Lena being mean?
No. Helen Slater here. So fun to know that you're hosting a podcast called Supergirl Radio.